Football, NFL football in full force after 2 weeks, whether you want it or not. Folks, this is the Push Off. Everybody, welcome to another episode of the Push Off Podcast, your favorite weekly NFL show. It discusses everything that happened last week while getting you ready for the next. I'm your host, Scott Hogan, and Cindy Cross from the video screen with me this week. It's
Dan, are you picking up what I'm kicking down? Right.
Dan, crazy week two. A week two that saw so much contrition, so many injuries to star players. We have to stop and ask that question every NFL pundit's asking: is this the no preseason season we're getting? What do you think?
Well, I think honestly, if you think about the fact that we're eight quarters, right.
Of play, two games. Yep.
So we're eight quarters of play. This would be about the tail end or week three of preseason.
Right, when they play three quarters, yeah.
We'd be right about there. This would be when the injuries first start happening. Now, my main concern is soft tissue injuries. When it comes to, are we ready to go or is that all set? These aren't soft tissue injuries. These are ligaments. These are joints. You can't prevent joint injuries with conditioning.
I'm very glad you brought it up. Yeah, that way, because that's what I noticed, too. These are MCLs, ACLs, Achilles. These aren't hamstrings. These aren't, muscle problems. Right.
They're not even triceps or biceps or pecs. This is not a conditioning thing.
There's a pec.
Yeah, true. But, that's not the majority. The majority that we're seeing are legit fucking ligament injuries, legit bad shit.
We cut out there a little bit, but there is one pectoral, and that's my guy Anthony Barr.
Yeah.
I got the list, though. Here's the list of the biggest ones, and then we'll hit more as we go through the games, but Jesus. First of all, quarterbacks, our man Tyrod Taylor goes to the hospital for trouble breathing, and you heard what came out today about it was that the own
doctor.
Yeah, the Chargers doctor accidentally punctured his lung with something for a cracked rib. First of all, he's going to go out there and play with a cracked rib initially and and then punctures his lung. So he's got to go to the hospital. That's scary as heck.
The one nice thing about getting your lung punctured in a medical situation.
Okay.
Is that they're we can fix this right away. We know what the fuck just happened and you can get an occlusive dressing on that motherfucker pretty quickly. And you can, get the treatment. It still sucks. No, I'm not saying Tyrod was, bitching out or anything. The fact that he could walk around a little bit with a punctured lung is ludicrous.
Right.
The fact that the dude punctured his lung, you don't have to do much to puncture a lung. That's the weird fucking thing. Or to collapse a lung, Because people say punctured lung, but I think it was just a collapsed lung.
Still doesn't sound easy.
No, not fun.
I mean, God bless science. I can get into that way that you're right. Can walk around and be okay. Okay. He's not going to play this week. Herbert comes in, looks very good.
Yes.
And head coach Anthony Lynn is I don't want to say you lost your starting position because our doctor screwed up, which bad news. You can't sue a doctor for a team because of the agreement there that you agreed to the assistance from the doctor.
Trent Williams is yeah, I fucking know.
Well aware, really. Trent Williams. But yeah, this wasn't the Washington football team. This was the Chargers out there in L.A. Let's go down the list here. Jimmy Garoppolo, high ankle sprain.
He'll be back.
Okay, he will be back from that. Drew Locke, shoulder strain. Those were the big QBs that went down. Then you got Saquon Barkley, torn ACL. Ugh. Christian McCaffrey, ankle injury, but he should be back down the line. But the rest of these guys are not going to be back. Raheem Mostert, sprained MCL. That's it. Cortland Sutton, they just said torn up knee. That's probably a few ligaments. And we love Cortland Sutton.
I know. Brutal.
Paris Campbell torn ACL. That happened immediately in that game. And then the Niners, Nick Bosa, Solomon Thomas, both tore their ACL. Bryce Irvin tore his ACL in Seattle. Malik Hooker, he's done from the season for the Colts, too, with a torn Achilles.
Yeah, the hardest part about this is, like, you just named off a bunch of exciting players in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah.
The positive is this always leaves room for someone else to come up and make a fucking show, you know?
So, Denver, you got Jerry Jeudy, maybe, even though he took a big hit in that game.
That was the time.
Jet McKinnon's healthy, and San Francisco's about the only healthy running back all of a sudden.
He was looking good, too.
Look good, yeah. So you're right, yeah. There'll be some young guys that'll get their chance now in what is already a crazy season, but the fans of these teams, especially the Niners, good God.
Yeah.
The NFC North is so already ridiculously tough that injuries to your star players is not going to help.
And Frank Gore's just looking at all these guys going, bitches. Bunch of
Frank's
bitches.
Frank's in the Jets, though. Nothing's easy for Frank.
Yeah, that's true. He's like, does anyone want to trade me to the Niners again? I'll retire a Niner.
We'll keep talking about these injuries because they'll definitely be coming up all through the season and next week here in week three. Also in the news, some coaches got fined for not wearing masks.
Big time.
They were warned and they got hit with $100,000 fines, and their team got hit with $250,000. It hits the pocket. Broncos Vic Fangio, Seahawks Pete Carroll, 49ers Kyle Shanahan, and both Monday night coaches Sean Payton for the Saints, John Gruden for the Raiders.
It's so a lot of these guys are making upwards of $4 million a year, right? But you're also talking about, like, that's basically a week's pay. Like,
yeah.
Imagine getting docked a week's pay for doing that shit. You'd be like, motherfucker, like, that sucks. So, you know, just keep your fucking mask on. And you don't even have to keep a mask on. Andy Reid's not getting fined. He's just sitting back there in a goddamn Bubble Boy outfit, you know, with a mask on.
Yeah, they're tilting the NFL line. Nobody's really come out and been like, this is stupid. We all practice together. There's all these players tackling each other, sweaty on the field. What? Why are we wearing a mask? Only thing I heard is like Pete Carroll being like, I'm mad at myself. Sure, Pete. Okay.
Sure, Pete. Sure you are.
And then finally, a little somber news as it happened here this week. Gale Sayers passed. He is a star of this league and will always be for the running back for the Chicago Bears. We talked about how he played very short career, but is so well known. Died at 77 years old.
One of the greatest athletes to ever play in the NFL.
Yeah.
Gale Sayers, probably the greatest punt returner of his day, probably the greatest running back of his day. To be able to do both of those things with such aplomb during a time when it was not easy to be a running back. I mean, it was the feature position in the NFL was to be a running back. And he was the guy that turned a lot of those Bears teams, you know, the Butkus era Bears teams, into something that was just truly formidable. That was when the Bears were the monsters of the Midway. Gale Sayers was the main monster. You know, that was he was great. He was such a
Bears
great.
Have a great history of punt returners and running backs now, though, too. So
that's true. Yeah.
So hard to compare the different like decades and different history of football like that. So I'll leave that out. But yeah, Chicago, not bad in that history.
Yeah. But imagine, I guess, for a modern equivalent, imagine if Devin Hester didn't have the back end of his career, just had that bright, shining beginning of his career, and was also a capable wide receiver.
Then maybe Gale Sayers taught,
Yeah, that's that sort of Gale Sayers thing where it's like, not only could you do special teams really well, you were an excellent offensive player. That was just rare. We're not going to see the likes of that again for a while.
No, we won't. Okay, let's jump in to week two. We're here and there's a game of the week that is, if you listen to us, it's pretty obvious. And Dan, you made it very clear that it should be this game. Like, it was a very good game. So you tell the people what it was.
It was Cowboys 40, Atlanta 39. What the fuck happened?
We all picked Cowboys to win this, and we were sweating it in that first quarter.
So I must give massive dap to one player in particular. a guy who almost destroyed the Cowboys single-handedly is Foye Oluokun.
Mm.
That fucking guy was peanut punching the ball out of every motherfucking Cowboy in the first quarter. He was a one-man wrecking crew. Much
it was kind of like Adrian Claiborne from a couple years ago once again, right?
It really was.
One guy.
Like, Adrian Claiborne was fine. Like, he was a fine player, but he wasn't, you know,
seven
destroyer
sacks, whatever
of
it was. Yeah.
Yeah, but this was a different thing. Like, when Adrian Claiborne went off, he went off on, surprise, surprise, backup left tackle, which we had again in this game. I was like, who is going to be this week's Adrian Claiborne? But Oluokun was doing a thing that I thought was very interesting and unfortunate for down the road. He got Zeke to fumble. Mm. He used to be Zeke's high school teammate. So I wonder if he was watching something specifically in the film that was encouraging him to punch that shit out.
Ooh, that's what I wonder. Cool. Yeah.
Now, the positive thing on this is Zeke buttoned that shit up real quick. And after the first quarter, this became a game.
Mm-hmm. You know? So it was 20-7 at one point, 26-10 at half.
20-0 at the end of the first quarter. At the end of the first quarter, 20-0 with three fumbles recovered for the Atlanta Falcons and a fourth fumble that basically, you know, they just didn't recover from. But yeah, it was 29-10 at the half.
Yeah, the Cowboys drive started 3-and-out, fumble, fumble, fake punt, fail, fumble. A couple years ago, I watched a game in Minnesota live like this, and that was against the Buffalo Bills, and they never recovered from it. I don't see the Vikings as a team recovering from this. Cowboys definitely did, and they have the offense too. Is that what did it?
Well, it really was. I mean, if you look at what the offense was able to do in this game, Dak threw for over 450 yards. He
exactly
had one touchdown.
Yeah.
He had one touchdown, but he ran it in. What was it? I think three times he had three rushing touchdowns.
Yes, he did.
No, a lot of those were short rushing touchdowns. The real fucking energy giver to this was, I know Zeke had problems in the first quarter. There was a run he had at the goal line, his touchdown of the game. He destroyed the children of DeMonte Kazee. He destroyed that man's lineage. I have never seen a full-grown adult man clutch his pearls after getting run over by a running back. And that is exactly what the fuck I saw. It was beautiful. Now, the crazy thing is Dak threw for 450 with neither his starting left nor right tackle in the game.
Yeah. And how long is that an injury that you're going to worry about moving forward?
So Tyron Smith is an injury. He's always had back issues and neck issues. So we're really watching that. I think we're probably going to get Lyle Collins back after week three. They put him on IR just to give him time to heal. Okay. I don't think it's going to be a long-term issue. The kid we had that was starting in his place, I believe, was Terrence Steele. And, you know, he did okay. He had a couple holding penalties. But, I mean, he's in one of the hardest positions you can be, which is replacement left tackle for the Dallas Cowboys facing the Atlanta Falcons.
Jeez. So, in Atlanta, once again, all offense, very obviously suspect defense. You're going to give this many points away in the second half. Was it Dallas and Dak going off like that in the second half, or was there a little bit of Atlanta throwing this game back away like they love to do?
So it was a little column A, a little column B. You know, the Cowboys were starting to put it back together again near the midpoint of the second quarter. You know, when you're out 20-0, then the Cowboys come back, they score a touchdown. That was that Elliott run where he just destroyed Kazee, and then Atlanta counters back with a touchdown, and then the Cowboys counter back with a field goal, and Atlanta marches down and gets a field goal. The problem is when Dallas got the ball back in the second half, they marched down the field in no time and scored a touchdown. Then Atlanta punted. Not to recount the whole game stat by stat, but then the Cowboys got a touchdown. At that point, if you're the team of the Atlanta Falcons, you start to tighten up tremendously.
Okay. What I saw is they went for that two, didn't get it, and it was like, all right, well, it's a two-score game now because it was going to be 8 or 7. You had to go for a two-point at some point there.
Yeah.
When they didn't get it, it was like, there's not enough time, and we know how onside kicks work in this league. You can't get it back. So I see Zuerlein set that ball on the turf. There was no tee under it, right?
No, he just laid it flat on the ground.
just kicked it in a spin. And okay, so we think about what was Atlanta thinking here. There were a couple of things. Obviously, when they first kicked it, there was the question on that we might even go 10 yards and then it's Atlanta's ball.
Yeah.
I guess that's their thought. The two guys that stood there, because there was two guys that could have easily grabbed that ball for Atlanta within the next 5 yards there. And they never moved on it. And maybe it's because that's what they thought. But it crossed right over there. And I don't know who landed on it, but immediately after 10 yards, it would. So it shows that there's a chance to get these onside kicks now.
Well, I mean, it also shows like you get to use that once and then you have somebody that's like, hey, just you got to gun that shit as soon as it happens.
Yeah.
They all were sitting there. Once again, this is the problem with Atlanta. Knowing that they've got a lead on the line, they all got real tight. And they're like, I'm not going to be the one that blows this shit. I'm not going to be the problem. I refuse. So whenever you have an issue like that.
It's all right.
I'm literally backing in. She's yelling. Not much. So my wife is sitting here yelling. There's a big spider in the room.
Give me
one second. Give me one second.
Okay, is it okay? Did you kill it?
The bug has been killed. It was legitimately, it was like a wolf spider. It was a big spider.
Ooh, that's what happens out in those bird mansions.
But you know what? You know what, Scott? I didn't hesitate to kill that spider.
It's a segue here.
I wasn't sitting there waiting for that spider to cross 10 yards. I was attacking
the spider. There you go. Atlanta Falcons now have the only team, and they have a lot of these records, to score 39 points, have no turnovers, and lose.
I know. There were. How,
I was going to ask you, how many turnovers were there for the Cowboys? You count three fumbles at least.
I think it was just the three fumbles and then two turnovers on downs. The first turnover on downs. The first one was a good call, honestly. Okay. Because, you know, they always talk about, are you watching film on your tendencies? The gunner, for those of you that aren't super familiar with it, the gunner and the protectors, like there's a protector on the inside and then there's a guy that's. The two gunners are on the outside, or one gunner, however you want to break it down, and they're trying to either stop the other gunner from getting the punt returner, or they are trying to get the punt returner. They knew from watching film that the protector on Atlanta's side would bail out after about 5 yards and would just kind of run back to try to get closer to the kick returner. Mm. When he did that, the gunner on the Cowboys' side turns around and is supposed to just receive a pass. It all worked, and then Chris Jones missed the throw.
Yeah, it was too low. And it's because you have a punter throwing him the ball, but
yeah. So it's a good call, bad execution. Totally understand things happen. We had to try to turn things around. It made things worse for a little while, but it is what it is. The second fake punt was just fucking stupid.
Come on, Bones.
It was the second one was bad. It was like, what were you looking at? It was like 4th and 5 and they ran it. It's just stupid. But even with all that,
still
40-39.
There you go. Yeah. Big ol' win for the Cowboys. Falcons 0-2. And that's two awful, awful giveaway games. And here we are. We're back with this again, and Dan Quinn can't be sitting in a very cold seat.
I cannot imagine Dan Quinn will be the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons at the end of this year. It's impossible. With these two, like unless he goes 14-0 the rest of the season, I can't imagine he's still the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons.
But I love these games, Dan, and you lived through this. How does this feel? Is this a top 5 one of Cowboys for you now?
For me, non-Super Bowl-related games, this is my number 2. This is my number 2 favorite game I've ever watched as a Cowboy. My number 1 favorite was Bills-Cowboys years ago with that Nick Foles kick in.
Yeah.
I told that story. I've told the story, and it involves some sexy times at the end. But this one, even without the sexy times, was just so fucking good.
No one would have known you could have said there was sexy times, but
I'm not going to lie to the people. I'm not going to lie to the people.
All right. Well, congrats to your team. We'll see how the rest went, but we got to move on. There was 15 other games or however many.
It's so good. If you get a chance, go watch it on replay. I don't say this about a lot of Cowboys games. You got to see this thing from the beginning all the way through. It's a fucking crazy game.
Nice. Let's get into the primetime games of this week. Sunday night saw Patriots Seahawks and saw a very good game where the Seahawks won it 35-30, but it was back and forth. Patriots would not let it go easy, as we kind of thought we'd see more of that from a Patriots team this year. But here we go. Patriots look like they're going to compete.
Oh, yeah, this is a competitive Patriots team. I do not think that if this game was played in New England, we'd be looking at a Patriots loss. You know, the Patriots have an offense now that is unique, to say the least.
Yeah.
Cam Newton being used at, like, prime Cam Newton levels. They just ran into a Seahawks team that is currently powered by perhaps the best player in the NFL.
Yeah, Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson throwing 5 touchdowns in this game, and the 1 interception, hardly his fault. It was off a wide receiver's hands and then goes back for a pick 6. But the way that you bounce back from that throwing 5, he's very scary right now. Oh. But Cam Newton threw nearly 400 yards. So are we seeing Cam healthy? Is his arm fine now, shoulder?
I think it is. I think he mechanically worked on some things in the offseason. I don't think he's necessarily like pushing his arm. You know, I think that Patriots offense allows him to kind of relax a little bit more. The thing that's really helping him is they are letting him run, which for some reason at the tail end of his time in Carolina, they didn't want to let him do. He had almost 50 yards rushing with 2 TDs.
Yeah.
Like, that is MVP level Cam Newton. Like, we are starting to see the reemergence of MVP Cam Newton. That is very scary if you're anybody in the AFC East.
Patriots got themselves a shot in the end of this game. They were down 5 with just under 2 minutes left, took it all the way down the field. This game was 14 all at the half, but when Seattle took away in the third, it didn't look like, I thought it was over by then, but give credit to Belichick, credit to Cam. It looked like at the end that Patriots were going to pull this one out because Cam had the ball at the 3-yard line. Great tackle. They took out his legs. Seattle's defense has some holes. That's about the only thing I'm worried about Seattle outside of Jamal Adams, who is everywhere, and he always is. It's Seattle's defense. It's Seattle's pass rush stopping the run on the ground. But other than that, they could be a Super Bowl team.
They absolutely could. I mean, there are still a few concerns I have, you know, especially on that defensive line. You know, you don't.
Bryce Irvin's gone.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think they're loaded with talent, with the exception of Jamal Wagner or Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner. Can you imagine a Jamal Wagner?
Oh,
my goodness.
I don't think those two men can procreate. I think we're okay.
Who knows? Science is advancing.
Science? That's right.
Come on, science.
But yeah, Russell Wilson, 9 passing touchdowns in the first 2 games. You can't ask for more from a quarterback. It's very scary. So what are your thoughts this weekend, Dan, when the Cowboys go to Seattle?
I think the Cowboys have a chance. Because think about the weakness of the Seattle Seahawks, right? Are they getting pass rush?
Nope.
Not a tremendous amount of pass rush. We struggle at protecting the pass rush right now. I've got 2 injured tackles. So maybe that's a wash. I don't think their secondary can handle my wide receiver core, which, by the way, we didn't even get into. My wide receivers went crazy.
Okay, no, that's true. They both had 100 yards, Lamb and Cooper. And when you talk about CeeDee Lamb getting over 100 yards in his second game in the league, a rookie wide receiver getting his feet under him, that's scary. When that happens, there's not a lot of tape on them. They don't know how to play those guys, and yeah, they can dominate. I'd say the other side of the ball, though, too. You're going to look at a lot of yards to the air on both sides because who is injured for the Cowboys? But Ouzier, it's your whole secondary. Trayvon Diggs didn't practice, I thought. Or
yeah, but he'll be back. He'll be fine. You know, Anthony Brown went on IR, so you know we do have some secondary issues, but Dak's just out there slinging that fucking thing. I think this could easily be a 40-40 game.
Yes.
You know, 42-40, I don't give a shit. But, like, this is going to be a blast. This is an early runner for game of the week for next week.
Right. Who are you taking?
I mean, I got to take the Cowboys. I got to take the Cowboys after they absolutely grew their fucking spines back.
Yeah.
And beat these Atlanta Falcons. That's got to give you some fucking cheese getting in the next week.
Oh, absolutely it does. But Russell Wilson is magic. You can't stop magic right now, not when he's playing at the top of his career.
No.
So I'll take the Seahawks in this one at a home advantage with no 12 man. I don't know how the home field works right now. But all right, let's talk about Monday night, the opening of Allegiant Field. the big Roomba, as it looks like. Vegas has a team. Vegas has a team, and it's the Oakland. It's the Las Vegas Raiders, and the Raiders won 24-34, beating a Saints team. No Michael Thomas on that Saints team, but a Saints team nonetheless.
So this one I called. I know you beat me in picks for the week, but this but one you I got a special feeling about.
Yeah.
This particular Raiders team, I almost said Oakland team.
Yeah, I did too.
Seems complete. It seems like a complete team. It seems like they are perhaps not great at anything, but really good kind of across the board. Which, you know, you're used to a John Gruden team either having a standout defense and a shit offense or a standout offense and a shit defense. This team looks like it can do everything. It's a Swiss Army knife. None of those blades are particularly sharp, but they could beat teams like Saints that are struggling in a specific area. Namely, Drew Brees finding more targets than Michael Thomas.
Right. No, you're right. To start with the Las Vegas team, Carr looked really good. He had three touchdowns. But Carr, that's his ceiling. What he leaned on is the guys that are going to make the Raiders a playoff team if they're going to be this year, and that's Jacobs. He had 105 total yards on the ground, but when he hit the holes, the guy's so fast. He looks so good this year. And Darren Waller, who he gave the ball to 12 times. There were the second half, it looked like, okay, Waller's doing 5 yards out crosses, and he's just hitting them every time, and they can't stop it. And that's all it was, 12 catches, 103 yards and a touchdown for Darren Waller. They don't really have wide receivers. He throws to Hunter Renfro a bunch.
Yeah.
They don't have the weapons to really do this, but they put up 34 points here, and they looked great doing it. So, yeah, I'm a little scared of these Raiders.
The one thing I'm worried about Henry Ruggs, who hasn't really put it together so far, because, once again, this is a guy that ran 9 routes, and the hardest thing to do in the NFL is vary your routes. Yeah, if they know you're just going to be running deep. Yeah, if you don't have a developed tree, they can guard against you. You can keep a safety over the top, and it kind of mitigates your ability to do whatever you want to do. So Ruggs hasn't really found his way, but the thing they can use in the meantime is use him to at least expand the top of the defense to make more room for Darren Waller. That's been one of the advantages of having a speed guy. Even if he doesn't fully develop, you can at least push the safeties back a little bit, and that seemed to be happening a lot in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, I give Ruggs some time. Rookie wide receiver, not all of them catch over 100 yards in their second game of the league. Let's talk about the Saints. You're up 10-0. You're up 17-10 right before the half, and Breeze throws just an awful interception and let them walk right up to tie this game at the half. Drew Brees, and that's been a topic already this week. There's some age finally showing. It was the thing we talked about episode one about 3-4 years ago.
Yep.
And finally, it's coming to fruition.
You can't throw that ball forever. You just can't do it. You're noticing some particular drop in his zips. You know, it's not quite the same miles per hour. I would like to see what his MPH is right now, because I feel like it's a significant drop from where he was. Drew Brees used to have fucking accurate rifle every single fucking time. It feels like he's got a little bit more air under balls that he wants to put lasers on, and it feels like he's a little flat on his deep ball.
Yeah,
he's still Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. He's still Drew Brees. Jameis Winston's not getting in there anytime soon, but he can't keep dumping the fucking ball off to Alvin Kamara, you know, for 9 receptions.
I mean, talk about that is the complete opposite you have there. Here's your options, Saints. Do you want your game manager, Drew Brees, who's going to play smart, not really turn the ball over, but really doesn't have the arm to go deep? Or do you want that gunslinger? He's going to throw it all over the field, can make every throw, but he will have 2 or 3 interceptions in the old first round pick. So, I mean, right now, without Michael Thomas, you almost need the risk. Especially if your defense is going to give up 34 points, whatever that was. But yeah, there's some problems here in New Orleans. They don't look like the cream of the crop that they once were.
No.
And I don't know, that South is still up for them. What am I kidding?
Yeah, I mean, the South is still wide open. We haven't seen the Saints defense that we were supposed to see. Like Marshawn Lattimore is still probably one of the top 10, if not 5 corners in the league. But the Saints defensive line has not progressed. You know, it's a funny thing because they, who was the kid they took in the first round? Do you remember his name?
Davenport.
Yeah. Marcus Davenport. Taking Marcus Davenport and having Davenport just be continuously injured has really hurt their ability to collapse the pocket. You know, you're sitting there and the only thing you've got now is Cam Jordan, and you needed Davenport as a counterbalance, and you just don't have it. You can overload that side. If you have Davenport and Jordan, then DeMario Davis is more effective. Marshawn Lattimore is more effective. If you don't have a counterpoint on that side, people can start to exploit your defense, and that's what we're seeing in these games, especially late.
Not an easy game for them to win. The Raiders are very pumped up to open that stadium there in Vegas, whether there's anybody in there or not. last thing about that game, it has my favorite celebration for a touchdown so far in this season.
Oh, yeah?
Zay Jones pumping everybody's hands with hand sanitizer, and then they do a jump high five. I love that.
That's quality.
These Raiders are 2-0, but they go to New England. And they get that new look Patriots this week. What are we thinking with that one?
As much as I've hyped up these Raiders, and I believed them last week, I don't think they are ready for that Cam Newton smoke off a loss. I don't think they want it. I don't think anybody ever wants Bill Belichick after a loss because he's going to punish you. You know, if anything, you want him after a win so he doesn't like embarrass you to make a point. You know, it could be so bad that he ends Derek Carr's career this week just out of sheer spite.
I really liked the way the Patriots looked on the road all the way across the country in Seattle. So going back home and having another team that also looks great. The Raiders look great. Come all the way over there. Makes me want to pick up for Belichick and these Patriots for this one too. So I'm with you there. I like the Patriots at home. I don't know if they have fans or not that week. We'll see. We got some time here. Let's talk about the Giants losing to the Bears in Chicago, 17-13. Dan, you had the G-men in this one, but I picked the Bears with my mom actually in this one too. It was 17-0, and the Giants made it a game.
Have you seen a more pathetic 2-0 team than the fucking Chicago Bears this year?
You know, there's a lot of teams that have hit some luck here, but no, Chicago is very lucky at this time. Yes.
They're 2-0. You can't take that away. And you know what? The Cowboys are getting beat senseless week two and shit happens. But there's nothing about this Bears team that scares me long term. Now, there's currently nothing about the Giants team that scares me long term. I just thought that Saquon would be able to do a bit more than blow up his fucking knee immediately.
Know? Was it like first or second quarter? It was half.
Yeah, it was super early on in the game. You know, Saquon wasn't able to do anything. I think Bears 17, Saquon-less Giants 13 is fair. I think the Giants win this game if Saquon's healthy the whole time. I really do feel that. But that's you know, a land that doesn't exist.
Yeah, the Bears did what they could. I mean, Trubisky threw 2 touchdowns, but also 2 picks. He didn't look helpless out there, but didn't look great. It was Montgomery on the ground, 145 total yards from scrimmage. He was their offense. The defense on both sides had 4 sacks, so neither team was really doing great on the offensive line. What it came out of is the Bears got a win, and the Giants got decimated with injuries. It's not only Barkley, but Sterling Shepard is going on IR. There was other people that left there, too. We'll see how banged up they are for their next game. But they're bringing in Devontae Freeman to fill up that running back spot for the rest. Wait,
honestly, he's the best available running back. You know you need a starter, a legit starter. And I think Devontae Freeman, while he doesn't have a ton of tread left on the tires, can help this Giants team look a bit more competitive against some mid-level teams.
Well, they get I don't know if they're mid-level or not. They get the Falcons this week. The Chicago Bears going to Atlanta. I don't think there's anybody in that stadium either. It's still Georgia. But can they score 30 points and beat these Falcons? What do we think?
No, I don't think they can. I think the Falcons, one of two things are going to happen. The Falcons are going to go 0-3 and Dan Quinn's going to get fired out of a fucking cannon. Or the Falcons are going to go, okay, restart the fucking season. We got these fucking shitty-ass Bears coming in. Let's make a fucking point of this. You know, the Bears' defense cannot stop Atlanta. The Bears are not ready. Now, once again, Julio Jones was having hamstring issues at the end of the Cowboys game, so who knows? with a healthy Julio Jones, a healthy Calvin Ridley, with a healthy offense, this Atlanta team should be able to take care of these Bears.
I think so, too. I think even Atlanta's defense giving up as much as they are, they should be able to control the ball enough on offense, keep their defense off the field as much as they can. The Bears have had... Not like they're marching down the field every time they have the ball. They have problems. They have dry spells in these games. They're not putting a lot of points on the board constantly. It was the end of the game last week, or week one, and the beginning of this game, and dead spot in there between. So yeah. I like Atlanta to at least put up enough points to win, but they'll do their darndest to give it away.
I just hope they don't go out to a big lead. Then I'm worried for Atlanta.
Right, right. One of them likes to give up games. The other one likes to steal them away at the end so far in these first two. Let's discuss the game that went to overtime, the only game that went to overtime week two, and that is in LA when the Chargers got their chance to open up for the new stadium. They lost to their Chiefs, the division rivals, 23-20.
I was talking to one of our mutual friends, Nick Tapina, about the Raiders. I'd mentioned, like, I think these Raiders seems pretty good. And he goes, you know, they might win the AFC West. And we both looked at the text and immediately went, well, yeah, until Pat Mahomes is killed, I don't think there's really a chance of that shit. Watching this game was the perfect personification of, oh, yeah, right. Unless you literally remove Pat Mahomes from the game, it doesn't matter. He can always beat you.
Yeah. Now, for two or three quarters, though, it looked like the Chargers were doing it. And I started thinking, and I go, yeah, if there is one team that knows how to stop the high-powered Chiefs, I think it's Anthony Lynn and these Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, they have Ingram and Bosa. They have, you know, I think if Derwin James was in this game, maybe we're talking about a Chargers win. But you've got the pressure, which makes Mahomes have to rush. You've got a Chiefs offensive line that is starting to look a little suspect. I'm not 100% on them right now.
Yeah.
But this is a good Chargers defense going up against Pat Mahomes at, once again, the height of his powers. I don't think this is going to be a bad Chargers team. I think this Chiefs team is going to be very up and down. They're just going to have a bunch of exciting wins this year rather than blowouts, it seems like.
Yeah, the game was 14-6 at the half, 17-9 heading into the fourth. It looked like the Chargers could have pulled this out, and they had the chance there, but only went up enough for the field goal right before the half or right before the end of the game, so Chiefs were able to tie it. Maybe they were a little surprised given this quick switch to Justin Herbert. We were all kind of surprised. Oh, Herbert's in. Taylor couldn't play due to what we already talked about at the beginning of the show. Herbert looked, and you texted me too. He looked smooth.
Yeah, he looked smooth. The only problem, and I really think the difference in this game was that Herbert interception
in the overtime.
No, I'm talking about the one in the third quarter.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. Because overtime was the turnover. All right, they punted it back. Then, third and one, fourth and one.
I know, it's brutal. It's like, just fucking press that shit, man.
Yeah,
come
they
on.
Need it. Yeah.
You have some balls there. Like, the Cowboys right now are not lacking for balls. We're like, we'll run it on fourth down. We don't give a fuck. It doesn't make any sense. The interception he threw in the third quarter was a bad throw. It was a bad decision. It was bad location. It was a rookie mistake. But at the time, they were winning 17-9 and holding these dangerous Chiefs to a reasonable level. And then the Chiefs score a touchdown, get the two-point conversion, and all of a sudden, now the Chargers are back on the ropes. At that point, having a rookie quarterback is now a liability.
Yeah.
You know, the fourth quarter was just trading field goals. But, yeah, once it got into overtime, you knew if they're not going to score there, if it's nine and out or 9 yards and a punt, it's over. And it was.
Yeah. The Chargers, I don't know if they've got all... Well, they seem to have enough weapons for Herbert to be successful at the gate. And that's leading on their two-headed monster down the backfield. Kelly, 113 yards total from scrimmage. Yeah. And Eckler, who got the starting position last year, 148. Boom, boom, boom. Passing, running. They both could do it all. That was great. But you're right. At the end, it didn't matter. The Chiefs get Harrison Butker into range, which is a ridiculous range this year for this kid who kicked a 53-yarder gets flagged for a false start. Okay, he's got a kicker from 58, and Andy Reid doesn't even clean out the visors like he can do it. And not only does he kick it once, he kicks it twice.
He kicks it three times, actually. That was the bizarre thing.
Yeah, man. So they went over with the walk-off, and it was obvious that he could do that.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a Chiefs team with Harrison Butker literally having two team record field goals of 58 yards in a single game. Truly bananas. I mean, it was a great game. I enjoyed the shit out of watching it. But yeah, I think this is going to be Chiefs games for the rest of the year, if we're being 100% honest.
Yeah. Let's talk about another one from week two. In Tampa, when the Buccaneers and Thomas Brady won his first game with this team over the Panthers, 17-31. It was tight. No, I'm sorry. It was 21-0 Buccaneers. Then the Panthers came to life and made it a touchdown game in the fourth.
They did, but it very much felt like the Buccaneers were never out of control in this game. You know, there's sometimes where you feel like the momentum is really swinging. It didn't feel like the momentum ever really swung back to the Panthers in this game, if that makes any sense.
I think you're right. I think what it looked like is Bridgewater and the Panthers started figuring out their offense, but it was a little too late. When they brought it up close, the Buccaneers turned around, handed it off to Leonard Fournette, and he broke that long one. It was over from there.
Yeah, it's anytime you can get it close, and then they basically have a dagger move like that, you know, and that it really was. It was like, as soon as that thing happens, it's like you've got no chance to recover. It's over.
Now, the Panthers did have some weapons. All of a sudden, Bridgewater, like, Moore had over 100 yards receiving, and so did Robbie Anderson. They both were big weapons for him, and they need to be, because Christian McCaffrey's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks now. He's going to IR, so it's at least three, but it's probably more of the high ankle sprain. You don't want to quickly try to get him back in there. So it's
especially in this division, you know, 0-2 is not out of it. You know, you've got a 1-1 Buccaneers team. You've got a 1-1 Saints team.
That's
true.
You've
got an 0-2 Falcons team. You are one game out of the lead. You know, you don't want to blow your load on Christian McCaffrey coming back too early. You know, you need that guy for the next, you know, for games 6 through 16. You can't just say, oh, we got to win these games now. Nobody's running away with this division. That's what we're learning.
But also, great performance by the Buccaneers defense. 5 sacks and 4 forced turnovers.
It's funny, you know, whenever we talk about like a Bruce Arians team, we always talk about the offense, but this defense has kind of been no joke for 2 years. You know, it's starting it's starting to seem like a really solid fucking team defensively.
I think so. All right, let's talk about the Bengals and Browns. Oh, no, first of all, we can discuss Panthers at Chargers. Carolina, the guy got off the ropes, they're 0-2 now. And they started slow last year, too. And then the Chargers, that heartbreaking loss, but they get to stay at home here. Who do you like?
Herbert starts. I'm going to go with the Chargers because as much as it's a heartbreaking loss, it's a heartbreaking loss that you're like, yeah, but it's to Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't, for some reason, it doesn't, like, stay in your soul the same way. You're like, well, that's the champs, I guess. You know, we got to take a better shot. We were so close. Like, you know, we don't really believe in moral victories, you and I.
Yeah.
Because they don't come out of the stat sheets, but this is about as close as you can get to a moral victory. It's like, we held our own against the fucking venerable Chiefs. I think we can probably handle these dudes coming into LA.
And you give Herbert a full week where he knows he's the starter. That's already been decided. And he's playing with some confidence, I think, after that game. He looked very good. What do you have? He has some good stats on there. Well, so
it is funny. He's such a pimple-faced kid. You forget that he's like fucking 22.
You know, 311, touchdown, one pick. Yeah.
It's a good rookie game.
Yeah, I liked how he looked. All right, now let's talk
about his balls.
you got good balls, man. Well, you know what I'm saying. Let's talk about the game in Ohio for Thursday night. It was a while ago. Bengals, Browns. Browns won it 35-30. Dan, you picked the Browns. I had the Bengals. And it was all about Burrow. I was pounding the table that he'd have a better game. He might have than Mayfield. If you think about it, Mayfield relied a lot on his running backs in this one. And Burrow threw it for a record for a rookie 61 times.
Joe Burrow is giving me, I don't want to say this out loud and have it be counted against me later, but I'm going to say it. Joe Burrow is giving me Peyton Manning vibes. Listen, I don't say that shit lightly. You know that I had him ranked as an elite quarterback coming out. We all talked about him. I think it's the consensus number one pick. This is going to be a rough year for Joe Burrow, but you can see this is a guy that already has the full faith and control of his team, his offense. This dude has a thorough understanding of what they are asking him to do.
Yeah.
When you throw for 61 fucking times.
In your second game in the league.
Now, he only threw 316 yards. Mm-hmm. Think about that. He had 61 attempts. That's not a great ratio.
Right.
But it means that you are the offense. Your team understands that you are the engine that drives this fucking thing in your second professional game. It's going to be a rough year in Cincinnati, but it's going to be a nice decade.
They played from behind, and they maybe got away from a running game, which would have helped Burrow get the pressure off him a little bit. But, yeah, this was a Browns team that, again, had a two-headed horse in their backfield, too, just like the Chargers did with Chubb and Hunt. Both of them, two touchdowns between them. So four total. Yeah, that's nuts. So Browns offense looked the best they have maybe in a year and a half. But that's against the Bengals, and this Bengals defense is really bad. And this Bengals, Joe Burrow doesn't have weapons yet. So you're right. I think it's a long season where they'll build it up there. He lost his tight end, CJ Uzoma, for the season with a torn Achilles. And I think he likes tight ends. I think he's a guy who looks for those guys in the middle of the field.
Well, he does. I mean, we're talking about a guy who made Thaddeus Moss a borderline player in the NFL. The dude loves tight ends.
Right.
He loves running backs. Like, you know, he got Joe Mixon involved in the game. He got Tyler Boyd involved in the game, who is not a great wide receiver by any stretch of the imagination. But I think we're also seeing, we're starting to see the downslope of A.J. Green, like, in a pronounced way. You know, A.J. Green is a guy that had three catches and only averaged about 10 yards a catch. You know, that's not the A.J. Green that we're looking for. You know, we're looking for a game breaker, and he just doesn't seem to be that.
Yeah, Bengals, you got to build still. You're 0-2, and you're probably heading towards the bottom there again, but that's fine because you've got a big old piece, it seems, ready to go. We get some games to talk about for them for week three, but let's wait till after the break. We'll take a break here, and when we return, the two-minute no offense and all the rest of the games of week two, whether some of us want to talk about them or not.
All right.
Folks, we'll be right back. This is the Push Off. Thank you guys for sticking with us through the break. We're back to discuss the remainder of the games for week two. We're going to get a few through some snoozers, and that is where we put them here in the 2 minute no offense.
Because no offense, but if you find yourself in this part of our program, it means you're kind of embarrassing yourself or you're kind of embarrassing other people. Sometimes it's a combination of the two, but we either think you are the crown champion of your division, or you might as well not even be playing this season. Just pack it the fuck in, get a top five pick.
Yeah, there's a very good chance we got some really good teams, really bad teams in both of these. So let's hit through them to get that clock ready.
And ready to go.
We're going to start with the Packers beating up on the Lions 21-42 after they spotted them 14 points.
Yeah, Matt Patricia's not going to have a job near the midpoint of the season. This Lions team just seems like a team that absolutely goes belly up at a point in the game when they're just like, ah, fuck it, I want to go home.
Rodgers looked fine again, but it was all Aaron Jones. 236 total yards from scrimmage, three touchdowns. Gugh.
Scariest part of the Packers is they could beat you any way they want.
And the Lions, first team to ever lose four straight games with double-digit leads within them. Good job, Lions.
It's gotta be the Lions every time.
Let's talk about the Cardinals beating up on the Washington football team, 30-15.
I really thought the Reds,
Ooh.
I didn't do it. I didn't finish
it. You didn't do it. You didn't.
It was close. I really thought the Washington football team was going to give Arizona a more of a run for the money, especially with the defensive line that they had. But who boy, Kyler Murray is on some Madden shit right now.
When the guy can rush for 158 yards and 3 touchdowns, he's a quarterback. No one let him know that.
Yeah.
This is a very exciting offense, and I can't wait to see how the NFC West keeps going this way.
I'm stoked.
And then finally, another game in the NFC West, the 49ers beating up on the Jets, since everybody likes to beat up on the Jets, 31-13.
Not just the 49ers, the third string 49ers beating up on these fucking Jets.
Yeah.
Nick Mullins out there making Sam Darnold look like a piece of shit.
Garoppolo, yeah, left at halftime. Mullins in, Mostert gone. The defensive line that we love, gone. Didn't matter. Jets weren't going to put up much of a fight. It was 21-3 at the half, despite the injuries. And the Niners just keep it going.
No spirit down there for the New York Jets. No spirit at all. Like, just brutal, man.
The game opened with an 80-yard Mostert turnover. There it is, Mostert run that we saw all day long and everybody else's cuts there. We'll have to take some time here to talk about the Niners and where they go from here. Now, next week, they play the Giants, so we'll run into that. But otherwise, everybody else we said injured. Tevin Coleman out. They signed Ziggy Ansah off the street to come in, put some pressure on there.
He's like, I heard everybody's ready? Getting injured. I'd like to join you.
Is Garoppolo ready to go for these Giants? I haven't heard.
So he's got a high ankle sprain, but there is a chance that he might be able to play this week because it's not like the guy's out there, you know, pulling a Kyler Murray and running the fuck around. We basically just need you to be a jugs machine. You know, what can you do for me, buddy? So it wouldn't shock me if they rested him and went with Nick Mullen, but I also wouldn't be shocked if Nick Mullen starts this game. San Francisco gets off to kind of a rocky start, and you see a return of Garoppolo somewhere in the second half.
Okay, but yeah, Niners, obviously they're going on the road all across the country, but it is a Giants, so maybe they feel good there. They need to keep winning. Seattle's still winning. Rams, 2-0. Cardinals, 2-0. Cardinals have a home game against the Lions here, week 3. I'm going to ask you there one, too. What do you think about that one?
I mean, the Cardinals are going to beat the shit out of the Lions. You know, I think we know that. Someone mentioned that because of the way the playoffs are going to be, there is a chance that 4 NFC West teams could make the playoffs, which is stupid if that happens, but it also could be super fucking fun. Every one of those teams in the NFC West is interesting. You know, I have my feelings about the Rams, but they're all teams that literally could wind up being in the playoffs.
Yeah, right now they're all very hot there too. I'm with you. I like the Cardinals at home. And then... yeah, 49ers at Giants. This is interesting. If Garoppolo doesn't play, I don't know. Screw it. I like how the Niners run the ball. I'll still take the Niners.
Yeah, same here. I mean, with McKinnon being able, like, they packed the running back room for just such an occasion. You know, there's too much talent still. As much as I like Devontae Freeman, he's no Saquon Barkley, and that Giants team is just not ready to win without Saquon.
Yeah. We can also do our picks for the big Sunday night matchup. This might be one for the NFC playoff picture when we're all said and done. The Green Bay Packers go to New Orleans. They're playing the Saints.
I think New Orleans has lost a lot of that home mystique. And I think the Packers are just too good right now. I see the Packers coming into New Orleans and handling these Michael Thomas-less, potentially, New Orleans Saints.
For me, that's the biggest question here. If Michael Thomas plays, I think it's an entirely different offense for the Saints. He gets you 100 yards, I think, on his own. This is a very hard game for me to pick right now, but I think the Packers have the edge for that reason. Also, let's talk about this. In the halfway through this season, because it's been 2 weeks now of no COVID positive tests from players, there could be very well in October, November, a big like, yeah, we're going to let about 15,000 people into stands now. And the Packers got, yes, they had a home game with nobody there against the Lions, but a road game in Minnesota and a road game in New Orleans already crossed off where no loud fan. Those are some of the loudest stadiums there are. And the Packers, once again, get the benefit of this. So, yeah, of course, Packers will win this one and go 3-0. Why not?
Are you saying that the Packers coordinated this COVID nonsense once they saw the schedule?
I'm saying I don't know if it is the China disease. Maybe it's the Green Bay disease.
The China virus.
that Green Bay virus. And then finally, there's one more game that happens next week that we can talk about, whether you want to watch it. It's the Washington football team going to Cleveland. They're playing the Browns.
Oof. I mean, I'm going to go with the Browns here just because I don't believe, and nor will I ever root for, the Washington football team. And the Browns did look fun against the Bengals, which is something they didn't do at all last year, is look fun. They looked entertaining. I want to see the Cleveland team beat this Washington football team.
The Browns look better, but they still kind of crapped the bed against the Ravens team. I think I like the front of this Washington team to stop the rushing game and give Mayfield a bad time. So you know what? I'll go out on a limb. I'm going to take the football team.
Okay.
I didn't know I ever would. But yeah, I'll take the football team to beat the Browns. Why not? Let's see. All right, Dan. Back to games from week two. We saw the Steelers beat the Broncos 26-21. It was a tight one with the Broncos having to go to Driscoll very early in this.
Yeah, I think the Broncos are done this year. Like, we talked about it, but they've had too many injuries. You know, we talk about this being a game of attrition. And we talk about losing your starting quarterback, you know, not having Von Miller, not having any of your fucking superstars.
Cortland Sutton.
With Cortland Sutton going down, I think they're toast. I think this Broncos team is toast. The fact that they signed Blake Bortles is a pretty good indication that they're punting on the season. Now, once again, Jeff Driscoll didn't look like shit. He looked like a guy you signed to be a backup quarterback. I don't think Blake Bortles getting signed automatically makes Blake Bortles the starter over Jeff Driscoll either.
I don't either. I like Blake, and I'm excited to give him another opportunity in the league, given how early of a draft pick he was. But I think you got to continue with Driscoll. He was at least there during the very short offseason that there was. Once again, I mean, Roethlisberger did his part over 300 yards passing, but this is the Steelers' D, and they're going to ride that D all season. 7 sacks in this one. Of course, Driscoll's a statue back there, but I like the Steelers' D so well so far from what I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, Devin Bush looks like he's really come into his own as a starting middle linebacker in the league. TJ Watt is always a fucking devastating presence. He had 2.5 sacks in this game.
Yeah.
The dude's just tremendous. Like, this, to your point, the Steelers defense is going to be the thing that carries them through. The Steelers have always had, hey, can you believe we've got a good wide receiver core, even with guys you've never fucking heard of? Uh-huh. You know, can you believe we've got a good running game, even though, you know, Benny Snell, who popped off week one, James Conner's back, James Conner's rushing for 100 yards, and we don't need you anymore, Benny.
Yeah.
You know, this is just a well-run Steelers team. There's a reason why the Steelers have really only had, like, 3 head coaches the entire time they've been a franchise. They run it well. It's well controlled, and it's just a fucking, they're a good team. I wish Ben Roethlisberger had never been their quarterback. I wish this had been a Phillip Rivers team. I think they would have won 3 or 4 more Super Bowls.
Yeah, I'm excited about them too. I think, okay, though, they played the Giants and they played a Broncos team that was decimated with injuries immediately. So maybe it means nothing yet, but until then, I think it's going to come down to, a Steelers team that's going to keep playing to their competition. But let's talk about the Broncos, who have a home game this week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I want to root for these Denver Broncos. I just think they're too decimated. I don't mean to do this early, but I am going to tombstone the Denver Broncos in week two.
Yeah.
This hurts me to do it, but it's too many injuries at too many key positions. Denver Broncos, tombstoned. I think they lose this game against the Buccaneers.
Now, are you saying they're tombstoned now over the Jets and the Lions and all of those teams?
So, the Jets came into the season with a tombstone.
Okay. All right. So, they're not the first tombstone team, but they're...
Yeah, the Jets walked into this fucking thing wearing a tombstone on their heads. This is the first team that I expected better of that I'm going to go ahead and just put them in the ground. I'm tombstoning the Denver Broncos.
I like Tampa, I think, in this one, too. They'll probably control the ball. I think Brady's getting a little bit more involved in that offense. Mike Evans had a great game. So, yeah, I think Denver's probably feeling their will a little bit shattered now. Let's talk about the Ravens beating up on the Texans. This one didn't make the 2 minute no offense, even though, yeah, it wasn't that close a game.
No.
33-16. Ooh, Houston 0-2.
Yeah, Houston 0-2 and also not looking good 0-2. You know, there's a way you can go 0-2 and be like, oh, we fucking almost had you, motherfuckers. Like, at no point did they have the Ravens number. No. The Ravens did whatever the fuck they wanted pretty much this entire game. They harassed Deshaun Watson. They destroyed this Texans defense. There was no part of the game they did not control.
They held the Ravens out of the end zone probably more than they wanted to, but the Ravens kept going down there, so Tucker kicked 4 field goals.
Yeah.
That's fine. That was enough. Texans,
that's part of the Ravens' game plan. You know,
that's true.
The Ravens go, hey, we get to that, you know, people always say, oh, you had to kick a field goal. With Justin Tucker, you're like, hey, we hit the 40, we score points. You know, yeah. And the way teams defend against the run, where it gets real tight at the goal line, you're basically getting to the 40 on every fucking drive if you're Baltimore.
And you're fine kicking the 3 because you have trust in your defense when you got people like Marcus Peters, Matthew Judon, yeah. Klaus Campbell. Those guys aren't going to give the Texans a chance to really come back in this one, and they didn't. Texans rookie that we discussed, Blacklock,
yeah,
little frustration, and he gets ejected late in this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's stupid. He's a rookie. You know, J.J. Watt threw him under a bus pretty spectacular. It was like, stupid, selfish. It's like,
yeah,
but you guys were also getting fucking throttled. Like, that's when frustration is supposed to boil over, is when you're getting your ass kicked handily. And you're sitting next to J.J. Watt, and you're looking at him, you're like, can we fucking do anything?
It doesn't get any easier for them week 3. They're on the road to the Pittsburgh Steelers. First of all, I don't think there's a tougher schedule to start than the Houston Texans, Chiefs. Then the Ravens come to town, and now to the Steelers, it's a rough one.
Yeah, they could easily start this season 0-3 against, they could go 0-3 and rebound completely. Mm-hmm. I think they are probably going to wind up losing against Pittsburgh, but I think it's going to be very close. I think Pittsburgh is going to be a competitive game for them. Once again, I worry that T.J. Watt is going to be able to take over this game defensively, really going to harass Deshaun Watson. But if he doesn't, if they're able to block that well, I think Deshaun could pick apart this, you know, not suspect Steelers secondary, but, you know, at that second level of the linebacker position, you can run on it. You know, you can run on this Pittsburgh Steelers team if you really wanted to.
Yeah, if you're Deshaun Watson. Yeah, I don't see yet Watson and these Texans having success against this Texas defense. So yeah. I like the Steelers defense. I like the Steelers in this one too. I think Watson holds on to that ball too long. That pass rush is encompassing. Texans definitely, I mean, 0-3. I don't see how you come back from that one. The division is suspect that they're in there in the AFC South, but it's going to get tough from there. So yeah, I picked them though to go 0-3. Let's talk about Monday night. And I didn't think we were giving Monday night good games anymore, but this season, I mean, you gave them the Raiders opening one last week. We get Ravens at Chiefs this week, week 3.
This is a prime time game.
Yeah.
You know, this is in Baltimore.
It's in Kansas City.
I thought this was in Baltimore.
I thought I wrote down in Kansas City. Let me look at it, because I have it down as at Chiefs, but I have made this mistake before.
I will tell Monday you, it doesn't matter where they're going to play it. I'm giving it to the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
Yeah. This Ravens team can beat up on this Chiefs defense. Just the way
you
they
are
built.
Right. It is in Baltimore. Thank you.
No problem. The way they are built is just to fucking absolutely grind you out. Once again, Pat Mahomes is a guy that can, you know, you could be down 30 and you're not safe. But this Ravens defense, I feel like, can keep him at bay long enough for the Baltimore Ravens offense to grind the Chiefs defense down. And I think that's the difference maker. I'm not saying the Chiefs aren't going to score 20 points on this Ravens defense, but I think this Ravens offense is going to score 30 points on this Chiefs D.
I think about the Chiefs in the last few years, and last year they had the downside of Mahomes getting injured now for a few weeks, and that was their call to arms type of thing to see other people on the team kind of come up on their own. the year before that, it was who can score the more between the Rams and that yeah. and that primetime game. I think this is the one. I think this is the one for the Chiefs, this one. And I think the problem is you're dealing with a Ravens team that has such a cohesiveness on both offensive defense right now, and they're going to play you keep away with that ball, and the Chiefs offense can maybe score right away, and then the Ravens are going to sit there with the ball for longer. So that Chiefs defense is going to get tired. I think Chris Jones is still out. Yeah, I got Ravens at I guess at home.
It's going to be a good game though. I can't wait to watch it.
You know, let's talk about.
Go ahead. Point though about the Ravens just fucking grinding you down. Especially like watching this Houston game.
Yeah.
Especially there was like, they had a 14 play drive, a 12 play drive, a 10 play drive. You could just feel on those drives that they're like, can you stop? Can you just fucking stop? Like, they weren't even long drives minute wise, but they were just a ton of plays run down your fucking throat.
JJ Watt's getting old. He can't be out there that long.
He really can't. I mean, nobody can, but he especially.
Let's talk about another tight one. Jaguars losing to the Titans 30-33. Obviously, we picked the Titans in this one, but it was a 30-17 lead in the second half that they gave up, and it was 30 all. Titans had it. They take the lead. It ended up being Minshew had a chance to make magic there at the end again, and the tip pass at the line picked off. Titans pull out the win.
Yeah, I mean, this Titans team is good. Mm-hmm. I don't think they get get enough credit for being as good as they are. And this Jaguars team looks fucking fun, man.
First of all, with the Titans, I don't think they get credit because I think people don't take the quarterback seriously. There's been a lot of negative stuff about Ryan Tannehill.
I wonder who's been saying all these negative things.
Guy threw 4 touchdowns week 2, and he looks really good these first 2 weeks.
I have repented on my Ryan Tannehill. You know, I've come around. The man ate enough shit. I'm down with the Tannehill now. Now, as we've always said, we are on the Minshew choo-choo as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the gunslinger. Those two interceptions, those are big difference makers. You know, like, even in the first quarter, Minshew having an interception after a 12-play drive, that doesn't fucking help. You know, that's a bad situation to put your team in. Basically, they were down 2 touchdowns right away. You know, but Minshew has that magic. He's never out of the game completely. But still, I mean, he put him in a bad position early, trying to make up for it late, but I feel like they just ran out of time. That's the hardest part.
3 more passing touchdowns, over 300 yards. Robinson over 120 yards on the ground. I love seeing him succeed again. I think Minshew's making a case where Tank or no, and Trevor Lawrence being a fan of the South and all that, it'd be a nice fit in Jacksonville. You got a QB. You got Gardner Minshew right now.
Yeah. Gardner Minshew saying, you want Trevor Lawrence, you're going to have to trade me and a couple picks because we'll be picking in the 20s.
There you go. Let's talk about the game where weather took away a bit of it, and the only people that saw it were the few people there in Rock Hard Stadium. Excuse me. Hard Rock Stadium. Excuse me. But the Dolphins lost to the Bills 31-28.
But more fun, like, this is my favorite thing about the NFL so far. Almost none of these games have been fucking clunkers. You know, like, our 2-minute no offense, maybe we could have had a game with a certain purple team in the 2-minute no offense. But aside from that, they've been fucking bangers, every single one of these, you know? Even this game, I love these divisional matchups against a rising Bills team and a Dolphins team that's like, fuck it, let's give it a shot, you know?
They lost power at the end of the first quarter and the halfway in the second, and that part's just not on the air anymore. They just kept playing the game. But both of these quarterbacks threw the ball around that field quite a bit. Fitzpatrick, 328, 2 touchdowns. But Josh Allen, over 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, maybe one of the best games of his career in the NFL, short-lived.
I throw this around when we talk about Russell Wilson, but we are looking at a potential MVP year right now for Josh Allen.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And how does it feel to say that after what we talked about him when we watched his tape in college?
I mean, he's still not as accurate as if he had accuracy, if he had legit accuracy, I think the guy throws for 500 yards a game. because his athleticism, I slept on it, to be honest with you. I did not know this guy was as athletic as he was, but my God, there just seems like there is never a time when he's out of a play. There's just certain runs he makes where I'm like, all right, you're 6'5" and you run like a deer. Jesus Christ. Like, Josh Allen is an absolute fucking first round pick. What a steal they got with him.
And he's got weapons now, and you see what happens when you get this guy like Stephon Diggs in there, who had 153 yards and a touchdown, and they're getting on the same page after no offseason, and that's scary.
Yeah.
Buffalo could be an AFC weapon this year. I really think so.
And I mean, he's fine in smoke, John Brown, you know, just every single time. Yeah. It's like, let's just get this fucking deep ball. And yeah, having a guy like Diggs helps him so much. Like, Diggs had 13 targets in this game. You know, that's a premier wide receiver when you're saying, I'm giving you a third of the passes that are coming to you.
Right. Okay. But it is the Dolphins losing. So they drop to 0-2. And they get the Thursday night game. The game that's happening first here for week three, where they go to Jacksonville. They're playing the Jaguars. What do we think?
Well, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars need to get to 2-1. They need to get back in the swing of things in the AFC South. And I think the Miami Dolphins are perfectly content to not win a bunch of games this year. Mm-hmm. But Ryan Fitzpatrick does... he's an interesting cat because he's basically going, hey, Tua, you think you could do better than this? And the answer is right now, no, Tua cannot. Mm. But I think it's helping the Miami Dolphins become a better team for next year, for when Tua is ready to take over and become the starter in that role.
We talked about it, and I thought Tua would be in before Herbert. Now, obviously, it's unforeseen circumstances, and we hope Tua gets better. But, no, I like the Jaguars in this one, too, because they've been playing so good. We thought they were selling it out, but if they are, they're not doing a very good job at that. Minshew looks good. It's not easy to tank in the NFL, because what are you going to do? Have players that will be looking for a new team after that not try? I don't think so. I don't think the Jaguars are seeing a tank. I think they're seeing a resurgence, and they like the guys they have in-house. I like the Jaguars in this short week taking care of the Dolphins. It's beard versus mustache. I'm going to put money on the mustache.
Yeah, who shall win? I think, while I am a fan of the beard in general, that Minshew mustache is top quality.
It's really all right. Good. Let's wrap up week two. The Rams beat the Eagles in Philly 37-19. This one could have maybe been a 2-minute offense, too. The Rams looked very good in this one. Goff, 3 touchdowns. Henderson getting the ball going at the 121 from scrimmage. The Eagles are still dealing with some injuries, but they had Sanders back in this one, and he looked good, but it wasn't enough.
I'm going to pivot to the Cowboys.
Of course you are.
Because more specifically, I'm going to pivot to the quarterback position. Because if you remember, the three quarterbacks that really came out in that draft were Goff, Wentz, and Prescott.
Mm-hmm.
Goff and Wentz have both gotten paid.
Yeah.
We have said what we will about Jared Goff, and I think he's overpaid for the position. But we are seeing Carson Wentz potentially lose his starting position to a guy that got drafted in the second round. If he doesn't get his shit together soon, you can put this loss squarely on the shoulders of Carson Wentz.
So, yeah, Jalen Hurd was drafted in the second round, and they even threw him in, but as like a decoy or something like that. I think it's going to take a lot to go away from Carson Wentz, and it has to be because you paid him. You gave him the big contract. It has to take a lot to walk away from him, more than it's taken the Bears Trubisky, because they haven't paid him. So that's a long ways off, I think. And I think the Eagles would really need to see bottom hit there. But what you're saying is true, and we brought it up last week. Eagle fans and that area have not bought into Wentz, and they don't have to. And you're right. It's going to get harder and harder to sell him on him if he keeps performing like this. I mean, he had 2 interceptions in this one.
Have you ever had a manager that you're like, oh, God, this fucking guy, like, he's a good employee, but God, he's going to be my fucking manager. I know we've used this analogy
before.
We have
used this, yeah.
But it's like, oh, he's going to be my fucking manager. He's a good employee. He's a nice enough guy, but God, I can't let him manage me. But the upper management is so excited. They're like, he's going to be a great manager. We believe in this guy. He's got full carte blanche. That's how it feels with Carson Wentz and the Eagles. mm-hmm. where they're like, we put all our chips in the fucking middle of the table. It's on Carson Wentz. And he's like, I'm not ready. I can't do this. And upper management's like, no, you absolutely can. You can make this happen. And all the players below him are like, I don't know. He had flashes, but I don't think he's a team leader. And I think that's a big knock on Carson Wentz, is I don't feel like this Eagles team belongs to him, even after all these years. My feelings on Jared Goff, that offense belongs to Jared Goff.
Mm.
You know, when Todd Gurley went away, it was nail in the coffin. This is Jared Goff's offense, good or bad. It does not feel like this is Carson Wentz's offense. It feels like he's waiting to give it away to somebody else.
I guess. I feel like Wentz maybe have gotten the bad luck of it. I mean, given how good he looked 2 years ago before his knee injury and what happened since. Last year, injuries were all over this team, and he was throwing to a bunch of nobodies and limped into the playoffs still. This year, again, we talked about how big Goodwin was going to be. I think he was the one they picked up. Or Godwin. I forget who they picked up, but he opted out.
Yeah,
Marquise Goodwin opted out. And then Jalen Reagor now. He's going to miss half the season for a thumb injury.
Yeah.
Sanders wasn't even in week one. I think he's dealing with some contrition around him. And this Eagles team, everyone keeps thinking they're the team that went to the Super Bowl, and they're not. The defense has gotten older, and they're just not. So they're coming.
And the
offensive they're having
line a, has gotten older, yeah. too. That's a big knock. You know, this is not the same dominant offensive line that, you know, Big Dick Nick was playing behind. This is a team that Lane Johnson starting to get injured a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, this is not as – they're just not as good as they were when they won the Super Bowl. That was the end of the window. They would hit it with Carson Wentz. The money may be for Carson Wentz to live through what is probably going to be a rebuild either this year or next year for the Philadelphia Eagles. And then, you know, we'll see. We'll see if he regains the team's confidence, because I feel like he doesn't have it.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I think they'll look elsewhere before they bench him. So I don't see that this season. But do they get a rebound here? Is they're back at home, and they got the Bengals coming to town. 2-0-2 teams.
I do. I feel like they beat the Bengals. They are a better team than the Cincinnati Bengals. But I really hope, really, really hope, that the Bengals have a great time, you know, and force this Philadelphia team to make mistakes. Because if they can make this close, I feel like Wentz will make more mistakes under pressure than Burrow will. I know that's a weird thing to say, but like, that just feels like where their heads are at right now. Burrow can do anything, and his team's like, cool, man, thanks, we got confidence in you. I feel like we talk about tightness with that Atlanta team. I feel like that's where Wentz is right now. He's tight, and his team can feel it, especially late in games.
Yeah, it's not a far trip for Cincinnati, but they're in a tougher situation here, and the Eagles need it badly. The Bengals might be a little bit okay. They're still rebuilding kind of thing. So I like the Eagles in this one too, but big panic for both teams when they lose this one. Whoever does, somebody will. It'd be a touchy one. Now let's talk about one that's going to be very fun. The Rams go to Buffalo. They play the Bills. Two kind of surprising 2-0 teams right now. Who do you like?
Jared Goff is doing the "what the fuck you saying now" tour to me this year, because he's like, listen, I'm going to go beat the fucking Cowboys. I'm going to go beat the Eagles. And then I'm going to go face off against a guy that I was sleeping on for 2 years in Josh Allen.
Yeah.
I don't think the Rams are going to win this game against Buffalo. I think Buffalo is just explosive enough. I feel like the one guy who maybe athletically is in the same species as Aaron Donald right now is Josh Allen.
Mm.
You know, just in terms of being a freak human being that exists on the face of the earth, they're both fucking freaks. So if they can get Aaron Donald blocked up, I think Josh Allen could have an absolute fantastic game. And I feel like Buffalo could win this thing.
Hearing a lot of positive Josh Allen talk from you this evening.
I've been watching way too much Josh Allen film this year. I feel like he's really turned a corner. You know, still the accuracy's not there, but he's finding dudes.
Yeah, for me, this is a coin flip of a game. I really liked how the Rams have looked this year. They seem like a bounce back. But I think Buffalo's defense is the difference here. I think Aaron Donald's great, but Tre'Davious White and the rest of that secondary are going to slow down Goff enough. And, yeah, I just think that Goff relies a little bit on play action and getting deep passes and stuff, and that won't be there. Buffalo will limit that. So I'll take the Bills, but I think it'll go anyway, and I think it's going to be a great game.
Same.
All right. Do you mind if we just end it right here?
Yeah, that's it, right? There was no other game. Oh, we do? Who did the Colts play? I feel like the Colts play the Jets, but who did they play this week?
I'm pretty sure it was a bye week. Fine. Vikings 11, Colts 28, which nobody picked, but maybe we should have.
And it wasn't that close.
It wasn't even that close. No, it was 3-28, and the Vikings put some more garbage thing on there. So 10 points outside of garbage time for the Vikings so far this season. Ooh. Yeah, okay. I mean, it's feeling awful. It's feeling like it's a team not ready to go. My brother, the pessimistic Vikings fan, is ready to see Zimmer go even. I don't think it's that far.
Oof.
We're in a weird spot here. Zimmer, Spielman, Cousins, Cook, all these guys got extensions. So you can't start changing those spots. You just can't. There's nobody behind them. There's nothing that makes that any better. You can point at injuries. We lost Barr here early. Hunter hasn't been in yet, and he's such a big thing. But maybe the problem is we let a lot of leaders go. Maybe it's a lot of the leaders of this defense and offense that, you know, they weren't going to pay. I wasn't big on Xavier Rhodes. You guys have Everson Griffin, Linval Joseph, but all that adds up. And I brought it up when we talked about this thing, but I was still very positive on him. But it's such a shitty offseason of getting the rookies involved, 15 whatever draft picks they had. They're not ready. It's either a bad two games, and, you know, Zimmer has one good season, one down season, and the down seasons are still like an 8-8, 7-9, a middling, whatever. Or it is Mike Zimmer and all the rest of coaching staff that has Gary Kubiak on offense and all of them. They're too old. They haven't kept up with the times, and you're watching a change in the NFL, where here we are, it's not defense and running game and controlling the ball. It is a mobile quarterback that can get out of the pocket and change the offense completely. And when you're just standing there as a statue like Kirk Cousins is, who had an awful 3-interception game, whatever, one of them was a bomb or whatever, maybe they're not ready. And then that means Zimmer has to go after this year. But what do you think, Dan?
I don't think it's time to call in the Feast of Crows to feast upon Minnesota's corpse just yet.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, you mentioned you're missing some players. You know, you're missing your, you know, you mentioned losing veteran guys, veteran leadership.
Yeah.
Danielle Hunter was supposed to be that veteran leader on the team. You know, this was now supposed to be Danielle Hunter's defensive line. Not having him there is a huge loss. Being able to team him with Ngakoue, I think, is going to be really helpful to you. Kirk Cousins has got to make better decisions, but losing Diggs is a real, real big fucking thing. Like, Justin Jefferson is not Stephon Diggs. You know, no. He is not a net replacement to him, and you're seeing Adam Thielen get more attention because of that. If Irv Smith can take the steps, like, you're still waiting on younger guys to take the steps. Your offensive line is not really ready to go right now either. You know, that offensive line still needs work. You know, Kirk Cousins is not a guy that can sit back there for 4 or 5 seconds. He's a guy that needs to get the ball out of his fucking hands. He needs separation from his wide receivers.
Back-to-back safeties will tell you. Yeah, no, you're right, because it's not just like team players having bad games. It's like pretty much the whole team and the offense. You're right. Cousins is leaning on Thielen, and they're falling behind too quickly to keep Cook going. What we're going to be starting to see here, and I have a feeling it's coming, is because the offensive line is so suspect and Kirk is not excited back there, little quick passes, slants, turnarounds. Remember when Sam Bradford was back behind a porous offensive line? Zimmer's got to go to that offense. Kubiak's got to. He can't stand back there when you're down 2 scores and throw it all over a team. There's just not enough time on the offensive line to do that. And there's not enough weapons. So this is a team that has to play like they're ahead. They have to keep the ball running on offense. It's been 2 weeks in a row where a very tired and young defense is left out there to hang because the offense cannot move the ball enough to keep the clock going. If it's three straight runs and 3-4 minutes steady off the clock and then a three and out punt, that's better than what they're putting them through. And interceptions right before the half that lead to points, better than what they're putting them through. So play it smarter so you're at least in the game, so you give yourself a chance to win, because right now it's been two blowouts and it's going to be a long season if this keeps going.
Yeah, I worry that Kirk Cousins right now is like, maybe I should play hero ball.
Yeah.
You know, which he did when he was, you know, played for the Washington football team. He was a guy that was like, I'm going to go play some fucking hero ball right now. That's not what he needs to be on the Minnesota Vikings. He needs to do what you're saying. Get the ball in the flat. Just get the ball out of your fucking hands. Get out from behind the offensive line and spread these teams out. There's enough speed on your team with Jefferson, with Cook, even with Thielen. If you can get this ball spread out a little bit, yeah, I think it'll help your team offensively tremendously. And that always takes pressure off the D. By the way, Holton Hill, still very good.
Okay. He had a nice breakup there week one on the goal line. Kind of suspect there. I don't know. The secondary's got to grow up. And they're not going to have it any easier. They're go back home, but there's nobody at home. They got the Titans red hot coming to town. 2-0 Titans. Who are you taking, Dan?
I am taking your Minnesota Vikings.
What? Why?
So, as much as I like what these Tennessee Titans are doing, I trust in Mike Zimmer. Yeah. I trust in their ability to not lose three games in a row. You know, Tennessee's very hot. Tennessee's very excited. They just finished an absolute slugfest with the fucking Jacksonville Jaguars. I feel like Minnesota is going to try to get hot. They're going to be spending a lot of time in the film room. I think they're going to come out and fucking find a way to exploit the Tennessee defense, get out to an early lead, and then maybe run the ball down their throat.
I do my picks also. My brother, and he picks game stuff too, and he's been red hot actually the first 2 weeks. Has been amazing. He's so negative. I looked and he's picked against the Vikings already for the rest of the season. He'll change. I mean, maybe that'll change around. We'll see, but he's very negative on the guys right now. This week, I'm going to make it easy. I like the Titans. I don't see the home field advantage. There's no crowd noise. We never replaced Michael Pierce when he opted out, and there's just not a defensive tackle in the middle to slow down a downhill running Henry in this offense. So it's going to be a rough one. I just hope we show up a little bit more than we have the first 2 weeks and show a little more positivity if we're going to go 0-3 here. I'm not ready for us to tank.
You've got to get out to a lead. If you don't get out to a lead against Tennessee, this thing is over very quickly.
Very true. And then finally, the Jets go to Indy. They're playing the Colts.
Oh, the Jets are going to go 0-3 to start this fucking season easily.
Yeah, never going to pick the Jets until, I don't know, they fire Adam Gase. All right, let's wrap up the show. Picks after week two. Dan, you bounced back. You really did. Mm-hmm. I have the lead on you, though, still. I have 22 correct. You're at 18.
Yep.
My mom bounced back a bunch. She's at 19.
Nice.
And then, obviously, my dog Charlie, he's the only one who took the Falcons. Didn't work out for him.
What an idiot.
The blind taking has him at 17 for the season. So
I'm beating the dog.
You're beating the dog. And it's starting to balance out. My mom's shooting back up the ranks.
That's true.
First of all, guys, thank you guys for joining us for another episode of the Push Off Podcast. As you see, expect these shows to come out on Thursday. We got a busy weeks going on, so we've been recording Wednesday nights, having out Thursday before. Get you ready for the new week. Enjoy that Dolphins Jaguars one this evening if you're listening to it as it comes out. Yeah, I'm excited to see it too. So here we are, Dan, for crazy stats to wrap up the show. This is the first time the Chicago Bears are 2-0 since 1993. This is also the first time the Titans are 2-0 since 2008. That's 12 seasons. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I said that's the first time the Bears are 2-0. That's a mean thing. It's the fifth time they're 2-0 since 1993. That's still not a lot given that was almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And then the Broncos are 0-2 for just the fourth time since the 1970 merger.
Good job, Denver Broncos organization. Well done.
Right. And that's what happens when you play one of those two games, probably in Mile High Stadium.
Yes, true.
That's what happened here. All right, and then finally, let's take a little dump on the Detroit Lions. Detroit Lions have not won a game now since October 27th, 2019. Since that win, every NFL team, other than them, every MLB team, every NHL team, every MLS team, and every WNBA team has at least won one game.
Fuck you, Detroit. I'm sorry.
That's it. That's our show. That's my crazy stats. Dan, parting words of wisdom.
If you are 0-2, you are not dead in the water just yet.
I think you're just saying that because I'm sitting here.
No, I mean it. 0-2 is a hard position to be in.
Because there's an extra wild card team.
If you break the quarters down, you know, you break the quarters of the season down, you might be able to go 2-2 to start the first quarter. You might be able to go 3-1 to get the second quarter, and then all of a sudden you got yourself a winning record. Mm-hmm. And as you said, Scott, there is a more open wild card situation this year than ever before. Nobody's out of it except for the Jets.
And I like
Broncos,
that.
Unfortunately, and the Broncos.
I like that, and I'm glad I let you say it. Okay, that's it. That's our show for this week. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We love all of our fans. Please catch us each and every week and join the conversation online. Why not? Let us know what you liked and disliked about our show. I thank you guys so much for joining us. I'm Scott.
And this is Dan.
We'll see you next week. This is the Push Off Podcast. Goodbye.
Goodbye.